Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Leah Chavez and creativity, you can't say one without the other. This New York-based artist really is an original. Her work explores the mysteries of light, form, and interior space, doing so through live performance, photographic processes, painting, sculpture, installation. Leah's art draws upon her fascination with the laws of the universe while investigating the mysteries of light, form, and interior space. True Light, a 90-day endurance performance and artistic inspiration, was the subject of a documentary. A Thousand Rainbows was the subject of a photographic book that explores interpersonal and spiritual relationships through the manipulation of light. Damiani, the Italian publishing company, put out the book. Donna Karan hosted the book launch for A Thousand Rainbows. Fresh off a pair of exhibitions in Manhattan, Luminous Objects, a live performance at the Spring Break Art Fair, and the solo exhibition Carceri at Two Rams Gallery, we're going to talk about that in a minute, Leah has been featured in a number of nationally renowned venues, the Venice Biennale, Istanbul Biennial, and the New York City Armory Show. She's been a guest lecturer at numerous institutions, including the University of London, University of Oxford, where she was a fellow in gender theory and visual cultures, and at SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design. Leah has curated and moderated art salons as diverse as performer and the American Museum of Natural History, is an arts writer for the Huffington Post, and has been a guest contributor to TED Weekends. Complete strangers, Leah and I met on the shuttle from LAX to the AOL Makers Conference in LA earlier this year, and in that half-hour ride, I was captivated and hooked. Leah, welcome and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored.
Did you always see life differently than others?
Well, I was born in Ithaca and then spent most of my childhood in Denver and in the Midwest in Iowa. I guess you don't really realize how different you are until you kind of look back. I was a solitary child. I relished my time in the attic, turn off all the lights, and spend a lot of time in the dark dancing and dreaming and inventing stories. And I guess that made me a little different.
When you say solitary, it was really kind of confined to you, right?
Yeah, it was very, very isolated.
Was that a good thing?
It was. I'm definitely in agreement with Goethe's assertion that artists create best in solitude. Solitary activity is really essential for a creative process.
When you look back, was it not fascinating to you that you began that at such a young age?
It is. I think, I was a creature of instinct and really expressing those early creative instincts for, I guess, what's become a kind of artistic process that integrates a lot of aesthetic kind of practice.
So even back then, you knew that in a way you were on the right trajectory for you.
Yes.
And was that encouraged by your parents and others close to you, and school teachers, mentors?
Oh, bless them. My folks have been incredible supporters of my work. I think as time went on, they realized that I felt called to be an artist, and I think that made them a little nervous, justifiably
sure.
So.
Sure.
My father said, just please don't end up like Van Gogh and cut off your ear. That, so I think, there are a lot of stereotypes that inform people's thinking around artists and the arts. But my mother greatly encouraged it. She's also a very creative soul, and I grew up watching her paint in the basement. So my exposure to art was very rich from early on. She would rent paintings from the local library, and there were reproductions of Renoirs and Monets,
and hang them in your house?
And hang them all over the house, and we had this kind of rolling exhibition every month. When she had to take the paintings back, we'd get a new installation.
That's fabulous.
It was.
You take a book out for 4 weeks, and then you take a painting out
but
for 4 weeks.
But of course.
Doesn't everybody do that? Oh, that's amazing.
So this was my normal growing up, and I didn't really realize that was so different until much later.
And then when you did realize that, what was that like? Was that a kind of unsettling epiphany at some point?
That's a really good question. I think I grew up feeling as though I were kind of this interstitial person, kind of inhabiting the space between various worlds. And I guess as I grew older, I realized that from a kind of social perspective. So I was one of those kids in high school who was friends with everyone but didn't belong to a particular clique.
Did that upset you?
No.
You were very comfortable in your own skin then.
Very much so. You know, and I think when...
Oh, that's huge. No, that really is huge. Don't
when the think? Time comes to have a daughter, that's definitely a value I want to raise her with. And sons. I think, you know, one thing that we don't tell kids enough, really, is that it's so important that you date yourself.
To have that kind of self-confidence and to be a teenage girl, a young woman, that is really huge.
Absolutely.
Even today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, we come to romantic relationships often feeling as though there's a lack that needs to be kind of filled.
Right, that he'll do it for me.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. When really, you know, it's like E.E. Cummings said, 2 + 2 = 5. When two wholes come together to make a, you know, an even more kind of fecund universe together, then they're more than the sum of their parts.
Did you go to college in the States?
I did. I did. I attended the University of Denver for my undergraduate degrees. I got a joint degree in international studies and fine art. And then after that, studied in art in Italy. In Florence, where I really experienced quite a creative awakening and realizing that my vocational calling was most certainly art.
But not in the traditional sense, correct?
Definitely not. I think it's a really interesting time to be alive as a creative because it's a time of this kind of transdisciplinary space. We have, you know, art is becoming a science and science is becoming an art. We're kind of reclaiming that integrative consciousness that was so popular in the Renaissance. So I think artists are working dynamically. They're, you know, we're omnivores these days. The conceptual art movement was extremely beneficial from that standpoint. You know, I think alongside many, many other artists, I work very conceptually, so I'll really be driven by the idea, and then whatever the medium is required for that idea, I will use it. And if I'm not familiar with the medium, then I'll learn it.
So take us on the creative process.
Well, the most recent performance that I did at the Spring Break Art Fair was Luminous Objects, and it's a meditation performance, essentially, where I sit without a break for 8 hours meditating, and really... After years and years of kind of training my mind and exploring meditation, I've trained it to engage in a theta brainwave state fairly quickly. And this is the state that's associated with creativity, inspiration, those aha moments, and very kind of vibrant visual imagery in the mind. And so this performance is really a way for me to do a couple things. I mean, it's very much inspired by Duchamp in the sense that Marcel Duchamp's wonderful work, The Bride Stripped Bare by her Nine Bachelors, is greatly influential in this work because I think what I'm really trying to accomplish in it is to update that sense of spectacle for the 21st century. And so with this performance, I'm really stripping down the creative process and revealing it, as it were. So creating a kind of nudity around my own creative process as an artist, and something like meditation and really becoming silent and depriving myself of sight or sound has been really central to my creative process. And I wanted to lay that bare for the audience to be more generous with my process, bring them into the viscera of that whole process.
And you did this over how many days?
Well, in this last iteration of the performance, I did it for 5 days in a row. And what I kind of do is I go into the state. Eventually, I can always tell when my mind kind of enters that theta brainwave state because I start experiencing extremely vibrant imagery. And I'll have visions, literally just these kind of incredible visions that appear as though they're emblazoned on my mind's eye by fire. They're so distinct. And when I experience those, I'll kind of very gently come out of the meditation, write the feedback of what I experienced. For this particular performance, I wrote it on an iPad, which was projected onto
the
back wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows the audience to kind of follow this process of what's happening. So this is really my kind of, it's conceptual. It's also methodological. It's a way of really exploring the inception of the creative spark. And I'm looking forward to going to London next month and collaborating with a world-renowned researcher in creative inspiration, really spending time in his brain imaging lab so he can study this kind of electrical activity in my brain as I'm experiencing these intense visions.
How did that come about for you? How do you make beautiful art? How do you speak to me?
It's such, this is what drives me and keeps me up at night as well. I'm really of the opinion that it's inspiration, creative inspiration, which gives art its real value and truly everything its real value. So it's that moment of being truly inspired, which I cherish and live for and mine methodically. So, for example, with the Luminous Objects performance, that was more or less a creative assignment that I received in a meditative state, believe it or not.
You told yourself you're going to do this.
I was meditating, and I had this kind of aha moment, this moment of, you need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do this performance. This is how you'll do it. Carry it out now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my performance work has been driven by those very distinctive moments of creative inspiration where I just receive an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
For the 90-day performance, True Light, I was going through my kind of morning ritual of kind of emptying my mind out on the journal page. And
you meditate every day?
At least 20 minutes, twice
mm-hmm.
a day,
mm-hmm.
if not more. This little dragonfly entered the studio, and within 2 minutes, I received this creative inspiration to go on this 90-day journey, explore these various kind of contemplative disciplines as creative methodologies. So I kind of received this assignment. It was very, very clear. You will fast for 90 days on juice. 30 days, the first 30 days will be devoted to the art form of prayer. The second 30 days will be devoted to the art form of meditation. And the final 30 will be devoted to the art form of silence. And it was such a crystal clear assignment. I couldn't argue with it. I just had to carry it out. And I mean, that's really my creative process. I live for those moments of creative assignments.
Which come arbitrarily?
That's a really good question. This is, I think, why I'm studying creative inspiration. I suspect that they're not so arbitrary at all. And as I've moved through these experiences of having my perception kind of naturally opened up by these different disciplines, whether it's fasting or silence or meditation, I'm finding that there's a song in all of creation that is ever-present, and it's merely the sort of deafening of one's ears that makes it seem as though inspiration is a sort of arbitrary experience. The more I tune myself and the more I tune into that resonance,
mm-hmm.
the more I realize that this is an ever-present state of creation and everything is singing.
Are you ever depressed?
Definitely. I don't think that makes me unique as an artist either. I think, you know, I feel things very, I feel extremes.
Mm-hmm.
The highs are very high and the lows are very low.
And are there periods when there's just nothing flowing through your mind and your body in terms of creativity?
Definitely. And those, you know, it's funny, those kind of walks through the desert I've learned to really cherish. It's those moments of being, acknowledging my own emptiness.
Because that's okay.
Because it means that I'm ready to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay because it's actually the promise of a filling. It's those moments of this sort of dry moments where
mm-hmm.
you feel as though you'll never create again, which it's part of that creative life cycle. You know, the seed is underneath the soil and it's germinating, but it hasn't quite broken the soil yet.
Mm-hmm. There's not that fear, really, that you'll never create again.
I think I still feel it every kind of creative life cycle. I still go through that, but it gives me an opportunity to kind of reassert my dependency on something much larger than myself, that kind of great creative muse that animates all art. So it takes me back to my knees, so to speak, to that place of acknowledged dependency, which is, it's a very, very fine line between feeling dependent and feeling absolutely desperate. Huh. And it's that desperation that really creates that sense of despair for the artist. But if we use those moments of dryness or emptiness to state our dependency instead, there's so much hope.
Talk to me about the exhibition Carceri, because that's also connected to a meditative state.
It's a multimedia process, so I'm using everything from ink to oil pastel, Conte, acrylic paint. And the work really takes the meditation process of the luminous objects performance and opens it to the audience in a new way, in a visual way. So it translates all that sensory deprivation of meditating for extensive periods of time mm-hmm. into painting, essentially. And so for the Carceri exhibit, each work was created over a period of anywhere from 5 to 8 hours. I'm blindfolded the entire time I'm creating the piece, as well as wearing earplugs. Carceri is derived, it's Italian, it derives from carceres, which mm-hmm. is Latin for isolated places mm-hmm. or even prisons. And so the context that I'm using that in refers to St. Francis of Assisi's cave in the Eremo della Carceri. And this was a place where he traveled to really seek direction, seek inspiration.
Talk to God?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think, you know, meditation and prayer for him were in kind of constantly informing each other. And, you know, I should also note that St. Francis is one of my great inspirations, not just, I guess, you know, spiritually or conceptually, but as an artist. I think it's, we don't really talk about the medieval mystics as being the great performance artists yet, but this is scholarship that I'm currently working on. I'm very, very interested in looking at St. Francis as one of the great embodied artists of all time. He was such a great performance artist. He, during the Crusades, walked from Italy to the Middle East mm-hmm, mm-hmm. on a peace walk. He did so much work with the poor and with within his local community that would, if he did it today, if this kind of activity would have taken place today, it would be called performance art, mm-hmm. hands mm-hmm. down. Mm-hmm. So he was a great innovator. But what I'm really interested in is his process resonates a great deal with what I do in terms of seeking inspiration and seeking light in the dark. So taking that kind of ritual that started as a child for me, spending great deals of time in the dark mm-hmm. and seeking inspiration. He did something very similar in his cave. He would go into his cave and meditate, and he'd wear blinders because the intensity of the inner light that he experienced was so great that he believed he would die if he took in any physical photonic light. So he wore blinders to really kind of close off any extra stimuli. And so for this Carceri exhibit, I really wanted to take that kind of conversation that I've been having with this, you know, just amazing inspiration in St. Francis. And again, try to be generous with the process, try to make it explicit for the New York art world and audience and really bring them into my kind of inner space.
And what did you learn for yourself in that experience? Mm.
Many things. First of all, I think I've learned that there is a very direct connection between the integrity of a meditation and the integrity of a piece that is made in a meditative state. And what I mean by that is if the meditation is exceptionally strong and connected, and I am centered, the work reflects that in proportion, in composition. I'm even grabbing the colors that I'm using at complete random, but what is so amazing using this process is the more synthesis I experience within that meditative state, the more synthesis the piece reflects.
Is that sustained over time?
it has sustained over time. It's so true. I can't, the page never lies. So if the meditation for me is broken up and I'm, if I'm not in boots and all, the piece falls apart. It lacks internal synthesis and I usually throw it away.
Huh.
Because it just lacks that inner life that, you know, makes these inanimate materials of art creation alive. So if it lacks that life, it lacks the inspiration. There are so many different parallels in this process.
Mm-hmm. Now, the work that you created from that experience, would you want to sell that?
Yes.
And have you?
Well, it just entered into the market last night, given the opening. So it's the first time it's really been offered to the market. And I'll be very interested to see how it travels into the world. I think there are a variety of collectors who are very interested in the work, which is great. I would love to see the work placed in public collections so that the public can really experience it intimately. Private collections are great too, but I'd like to see it in a few public collections.
Well, then obviously it gets to many, many more people. Yeah. I didn't mean to make this connection, but I'd like to do it now based on the fact that you brought that up, because in a Huffington Post piece that you wrote earlier this year called Challenges for Women in the Arts, the statistics are just mind-blowing in 2014. 51% of artists are female, but only 5% of the art displayed in museums is created by women. I want to shoot myself. And another statistic that was in your article was women earn more than half of the MFAs, Master of Fine Arts degrees in the United States, but only a third are gallery represented. So in conjunction with what you wrote is a recently published New York Times article on the gender gap at the top museums. Just a statistic to throw out to you. Women run just 25% of the biggest art museums in this country and in Canada. They earn 33% less than their male counterparts, and that's a report from the Association of Art Museum Directors. So what I'm going to ask you, Leah Chavez, artist, what are we going to do about this?
Well, we're going to reinvent the model, and it's happening right now. We're going to reinvent the way that art is displayed, disseminated, shared, and it's happening. So with, just as an example, with this current show, Carcheri, I'm very honored to be working with a woman by the name of Tali Wertheimer. This is her first gallery in New York. She comes from a biennial background. So she comes from the Performa organization, which is founded by Rosalie Goldberg, who really put performance art on the art historical map. Pivotal organization, organized, founded by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So Tali's coming out from underneath this incredible kind of mentorship.
And she's a young woman.
She's very young, very savvy, one of the most talented young curators of her generation, hands down. And what she's doing is very interesting because she's reinventing the gallery model in this new space. She's coming from a Biennale world. She's curating exhibitions, certainly, of individual artists. So there is a commercial gallery kind of component of this space. But in addition to that, she's planning on partnering with institutions from MoMA to Guggenheim, international institutions, bringing in exciting and adventurous projects that wouldn't otherwise be realized.
But projects by
within,
women?
Within the institution. I think it's more kind of broad than that. It's mm-hmm. women and men. But what she's doing at a kind of top level is changing the model through which art is shown in the commercial gallery world, which is really probably the most challenging world to kind of transform and penetrate from a gender perspective. So I think it's that's one example of many. There are so many women, young women in the arts in New York who are starting their own arts organizations and, you know, really reinventing how art is shared with the public and collected. And I'm very hopeful. I think you really have to kind of get your hands dirty and get in from a top-down kind of model-based perspective to create change. The last thing we want to do as women is beg for permission to participate. And I think, you know, instead of asking for the door to be open to us, we should just, you know, we'll build new institutions.
Or we'll just push our way through the door?
No, I think we'll build new institutions. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we'll build new institutions that, you know, we create the doors. So we're able to open them. But it's a really, you know, it's a really fluid time for the art world. There's a lot of healthy critique around the current gallery and art fair model. And certainly the kind of male-dominated aspect of that is part of the, I guess, the subject of part of this critique. But even more so, there is a lot of the hierarchies in the art world currently are destabilized and fluid, and it's in this process of being reinvented. So
across the country and across the globe, do you feel?
Across the globe, yeah, absolutely.
What do you see when you travel abroad?
It really depends on the country. I mean, I think if we're going to focus on women, I think it's interesting. There are so many different markets right now, and they all have their own sort of characteristics. I'd say New York is a really good one to watch for indications of more systemic changes, because New York is still at the forefront.
I was going to say
of
kind of the
happening.
Center of the universe.
Yeah, still, yeah. Which mm-hmm. is really, you know, it's a great time to be in New York City mm-hmm. and to really dig your heels in and be a creator here. As difficult as it is sometimes to commercially exist as an artist, it's still extremely important to be here. But that said, I think, you know, we're seeing it's such a time of transition. It's such a time of multidisciplinary work. It's such a great time for performance. So there are so many things happening that make it a more, I guess, a friendlier environment for female artists to participate. I think a lot's going to change in our generation for the better.
Where do you see yourself? Where are you headed? Where are you going?
Well, I think the most ambitious way I could state that would be I see myself being completely present, and that's very difficult, but it's also very futuristic. If we can be present, we're actually living in the future, and that's how artists create new worlds. That's how we usher in innovation in the future. We're completely present, and we learn how to tune our senses so that we're exceptionally alive beings, and we bring that consciousness into the society that we season. So that's what I would say. If I'm doing my very best, I'm present. And right now I'm present in New York. I travel a good deal for residencies and exhibits and stuff like that. But I feel really privileged to be in New York City right now. I think it's a thrilling place, and it's still, maybe more than ever before, it's a living laboratory for art.
You know, I don't think there's much more to add to that except to say that I can't thank you enough for being here today and bringing your exciting and kind of glorious, and I'm going to be honest, kind of for me, unorthodox approach to the arts. It's just fascinating. Leah, I only wish you good things. And it sounds to me that that's what's on your plate.
Sandy, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Well, that's how I feel too. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.